So before we talk about what self-compassion is, I mean, what common humanity is, let's talk about what it's not. And you should be able to just look on those two sheets and that explains everything, I think. Particularly the one that's a cross or a four boxes. That comes from Susan Fiske, F-I-S-K-E's work. And she's a psychologist at some Ivy League school. I think Princeton. And she has this, are people familiar with like in groups and out groups? Like in a sense, there's all this psychology literature that we sort of define ourselves by who our in group is as opposed to out groups. And she does a lot of research, and she has this model in which there's sort of two dimensions that she thinks we categorize people in. Or under, and that I like to use the word labels, label individuals and sort of put them in a box, so to speak. And she thinks there's one is a warmth dimension. And I don't want to get too much into these, but warmth is basically how we perceive someone as being likable or not, in a sense. Like, basically, do we like that person or not? And then the other dimension is, she calls competence. It's sort of competence, status, in relation to ourself, kind of, in a sense. So let's kind of go, and basically this happens at a very immediate level before we're aware of it. We're sort of categorizing people. And so somebody, I'm working, say, in my office at school, and somebody comes in the door. I might know something about them, I might not, but before we're really engaged or before being engaged much, my brain has sort of already like sized them up in terms of certain things and categorized them. And and that's going to determine how I respond to them. And without breaking all these down, I'll put some of our articles on the site. High warmth and high status would be status isn't the best word. She uses the word competence, but it's sort of related to status or a kind of role in society in relation to me or something like that. But high warmth and high status would be likable people that are in kind of positions that I respect, or that it's kind of the group I consider myself in or aspire to be in. So it's kind of like my in-group and the in-group out-group distinction. And if someone is suffering, here's a suffering word, sorry. We're not going to have a lot of the suffering word this week. But if someone's suffering and that someone is in that group, my response is more likely to be compassion or sympathy for an individual. And I'll put an article somebody did, this is before the election, of Trump and Hillary supporters, and they did a study on with public figures and not just politicians but musicians and all this, and they used some sort of scale that measured this stuff, and people put people in these one of these four categories, and it was very different, which is interesting, which shows that we really perceive people differently. Like some people who are in that would be the good category, the high warmth, high competence, the good category. Someone else can perceive the same individual with the same qualities and perceive them totally different. And that perception is going to affect how they respond to that individual. So high warmth, this isn't real important to go through, but I think it's interesting. And high warmth, low status would be people we like. And this can be individuals we know, or stereotype groups. And she's done a lot of research on stereotypes, and that just a stereotype in and of itself is enough to determine our response to somebody. This is the bad news. I said this is the bad news first. The good news is this all can be untrained, or we can train ourselves not to do this. High warmth and low status would be persons or groups that we like, but we somehow see as kind of lower than us? And what might be the response there if someone's suffering on our part?
Pity.
Pity, yeah. Yeah, and Virginia Satir sculpted pity, like if we were sculpting an emotion, I might lean down, somebody might lean down, and if I'm having pity for that person, I'm kind of like patting them on the head. Whereas compassion would be like standing up, kind of heart to heart. But pity is very much, I'm up here, you're down here, poor you.
So are we supposed to see this really as our perception more than there are people out in the world who are objectively in this quadrant?
I'm presenting this as a model of how our brain
sorts people
on almost a perceptual level. Just a kind of a model, not like this is always happening, but it's a model for, yeah. The default, in the mindfulness week, I passed out stuff about the default brain state, and that's kind of like what your brain is doing when they, this is what I do this when I'm talking about brains. When they hook people up and say, sit there and don't think about anything or don't do anything, that's called the default brain state, and it jumps around and does all this stuff. But people through meditation and other things can train their brains not to do that. So after like so many hours of meditation, they ask people to do that and their brains are like doing less jumping around and more in tune with their body and that kind of thing. So I'm taking this as kind of like the default brain of what we're doing in terms of our social situation. Programmed or by culture, I don't know, but there seems to be evidence that we're kind of going around putting people in boxes.
So even people we don't know?
Yes.
I got you.
Yeah, so...
Like you said, Trump or Hillary, like that.
And I'll point out, for instance, and she does research on this, the stereotype, so we might have a stereotype group that we associate with. And if we think somebody's in that group, we're going to have that default response to them. For instance, the high warmth, and this differs to individual. This isn't like an objective. Certain types of disabilities are often in this. The disabilities that people are more, have more positive responses to would be in this category, perhaps. And children might be in this category. And I'll put some of her articles where she lists some of the categories that stereotypes. And then low status, low warmth. These would be persons or groups we kind of look down on and we don't see as necessarily likable either. So it could be an individual. The groups, and I'm just going to kind of steamroll. I don't want to spend too much time on this part of it. I'm presenting it more as a tool. This would be, the emotion there is often disgust or contempt or more disgust, I think, than the contempt. Persons who are homeless often fall into this category. So the person who is homeless, who is experiencing difficulties, the default for many people is not compassion, but could be disgust or I don't want to look at it or what, I'm going to push you to the side, that kind of thing. And I can make myself cry here talking about some of the neuroscience studies that if they show persons pictures of a homeless person, it triggers the same parts of the brain as if you're showing persons a picture of trash or something like that. And I'm saying this to normalize it. This is just the way the brain is working in a sense. High status and low warmth, these would be people like, think of the politician who you don't like or the business person you don't like or whoever. So it's people like you perceive as having some sort of authority or control or power that but you don't like them. And here, if that person's suffering, the response could be, one of the responses could be envy, but in terms of suffering, it might be schadenfreude even, or
hooray.
Sometimes people get down when I present this, so I don't want to spend too much time on this. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's fascinating. I've been reading this stuff on emotions, and they talk about, this one psychologist I'm reading, she talks about on the perceptual level, they think that any moment of perception, there's two things going on. It's like whether we like it or not, what we're perceiving. That's the effect, and how strong it is. That's the valence. So I tie that into here. I think we're perceiving individuals in stereotypes, and we're having these immediate emotional responses under the surface, which translate into these beliefs such as, oh, they deserve their suffering. They made their own bed. That might be for one group. Whereas if it's my family member undergoing the same thing, it might be compassion. Whereas if it's somebody from this other group, it might be, that's the bad news, so to speak, I guess, if it's bad news. The good news is we can untrain that. That's what we're doing in the Common Humanity Practice. I think of it as a softening the edges. I'll use that phrase a lot. We can really work with this stuff and start softening the edges. And humanize people more. Susan Fiske uses the word dehumanize, which is a pretty strong term, but she talks of the psychological process as one of where we're dehumanizing others, in a sense, objectifying others. In the Common Humanity Practice, we're really humanizing everybody, ideally. And we start with people we know and expand from there. It's a very interesting practice. I'm ready to jump in, but it's not time yet. So maybe any questions, and I'd like to take a 5-minute break. I kind of threw that out there, but I think it's important that to see these barriers to compassion that exist. And they're natural, in a sense. They're not like anybody has them by their own fault. I think it's just something, I don't know, I read different stuff. Some people would say they're evolutionary strategies, and now we have these concepts laid over. I don't know, but it seems like it's just the way Paul Gilbert would say, our tricky brains work sometimes. And so the first step is just to be aware of it. And then we really, in my experience, really start breaking that down in this practice this week. And breaking it down meaning softening it up a little bit. All right, let's take 5 minutes and then jump into it.